This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free
radio.
Thanks for tuning in to 93.3 CFMU Radio. This is Progressive Voices. I'm Riaz Cyanimolgi.
And I'm Ryan Sparrow.
Today we are joined in studio by Donald Wells, Director of the School of Labor Studies here at McMaster. Don, thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me, Riaz.
There's this new living wage campaign being launched. You made a presentation at City Council in December. What is a living wage?
Well, basically a living wage is what it's going to take to get people who are working in jobs out of poverty. So it's about meeting their basic needs for utilities, food, rent, and so on, making a calculation of what those needs are specific to Hamilton, and then saying, okay, this is the kind of wage that people need. They need more than just the minimum wage, because the minimum wage right now at $10.25 an hour is actually keeping people in poverty. You need to have a living wage that will get people out of poverty. It's a frugal level. It's not particularly generous. It's a no frills kind of living wage, but it's enough. It's adequate to meet people's basic needs and to allow them to participate in the community.
So, what's the living wage that you calculated, you and your fellow researchers, and how was it determined?
Okay, we took the cost, the actual costs for rent, for food, for transportation, and so on in Hamilton. And we calculate it for three different kinds of families. One's for a single person, another one's for a single parent with a three-year-old, and another one's for two parents, one with a kid's 10-year-old and a 14-year-old. And based on that, on the actual costs of living here in Hamilton, we calculate a living wage at $14.95 an hour based on a 37.5-hour week.
Do you have a picture of how many workers in Hamilton are making less than a living wage?
We do. There are about 30,000 people in Hamilton now who are working at jobs and making less than a living wage. We figure that there's 8,000 families with kids where at least one of the parents is working full time that are living below the living wage, that are living in poverty, even though they're working.
And are there benefits to the economy itself and society as a whole by having a living wage policy?
There are. There are major benefits to the society and there are major benefits to the economy. Think about what a poor person does when they get a wage increase. Do they spend the money on buying an imported Beamer? Do they spend the money on taking a vacation in Cuba? No, they don't. They spend the money locally. They spend it and they spend it locally. So when you redistribute income to people who are going to be spending money locally, you bring vitality to the local economy. The other thing is you do for the society is that we've got a lot of people who are working full-time, working jobs, trying to cobble together two jobs, three jobs, whatever, just in order to make ends meet. They've got kids. They don't have time for the kids. They don't have time to participate in the community. So the society benefits because we can build stronger families, we can build stronger communities. We also know that when people are in poverty, they have a lot more health care problems. They have a lot more need for food banks. They need to access other kinds of social services. We know that policing costs go up. All of these things become a benefit to the community when you have fewer people who are poor in the community, and it means that you can have people who are citizens who actually can be part of our community and participating in our community, and their kids can be participating in our community.
So here at McMaster, last year, there was a labor dispute between the food service workers. So are there workers at McMaster who aren't being paid a living wage?
It's interesting that you raised that, Riaz, because that's a particularly interesting case. Yes, there are folks here at McMaster who do not make a living wage. We don't know exactly how many aren't making a living wage, but we know that there are cleaners here at the university, there are food service workers, there are students who are working here at the university who don't make a living wage. We're going to be going to the university administration and to President Dean and talk to him about what it would take to get the university to a living wage, how many people would this involve, what the cost would be, and see about going forward. So that's an exciting initiative. We're looking forward to it, and maybe I'll be able to bring you back some progress and some news relatively shortly.
In order to reduce poverty and ensure prosperity to Canadian citizens, what else must be done in addition to a living wage?
Well, I think that the Occupy Wall Street protesters have it right. We've seen over the last 30 years or so a massive shift of wealth and income from poor people, middle income people, to the top 1%. So I think that we're seeing here in Canada, for example, the rate of increase of income inequality is faster now than it is in the United States. So I think that we need to be addressing this increasing disparity of income in Canada. And one of the best ways we can do that is by having a more progressive tax system. There are all kinds of loopholes for wealthy people to put their wealth in Swiss bank accounts, to have them located in low-tax jurisdictions away from Canada and so on. There's all kinds of loopholes that we could address. I think that the Canadian public is becoming much more attuned to these obscene levels of CEO salaries that have been going up. That'll help. There are a lot of other things that we can do as well. I think one of the most important things people can do is try to join, if they can, or create a good, strong democratic union. We know that trade unions have been one of the best guarantors of people being able to move up and to move up out of poverty. It needs to be strong. It needs to be democratic. And we need to have fewer employers interfering with citizens' democratic rights to join unions, to bargain collectively. We don't need people be threatening them. If you join a union, we're going to go to Muncie, Indiana, or et cetera. Right? I think those are some of the things. We also need to have more public transportation, et cetera. The whole public housing. There's a whole range of things that we know that we can do to help people move out of poverty. And those are some of the things we could do fairly shortly. They're not unrealistic. These are not pie-in-the-sky kinds of initiatives that we could be talking about.
So, Don, just to wrap up, do you think the campaign has a lot of momentum here in Hamilton? Has City Council been receptive to it? Are citizens receptive to it? And how can more people get involved in the process?
Okay, that's a great question, Riaz. The city, we made a presentation to the city in December, unanimously supported finding out more about what the living wage would cost, getting back to us about what this would be, what they can do to promote a living wage in the city. So we're very heartened by that. There's mm-hmm. been we've been working on this for about 3 years now. There's growing support in the business community for it because businesses also see that this is beneficial to them. They benefit from having a more vital, healthier local economy. They can also benefit from a living wage because they can reduce their costs of recruitment, they can reduce absenteeism, they can increase productivity, and so on. So we're seeing a lot of support from employers. There's support from, obviously, from people who are in poverty groups in the city. And I think also religious organizations have been extremely supportive. So what you're seeing is, I think, a pretty broad-based level of support. We're going to do more education around this, make it more understood by people. You're doing a wonderful service here by helping people understand what the living wage is. Here at McMaster, I think you're going to see this happening at other institutions across the city as well, not just with City Hall, and also in the private sector as well. I think that once we have an idea about what it's going to take to get a living wage here at McMaster, what it's going to cost and so on, there's going to be all kinds of possibilities for students and other people here at McMaster to take part in saying, here's the kind of living wage we need, here are the concerns we have, here are the issues, here's how we can help implement it and so on. And you can see that going across the city as well. So it's not just in Hamilton in terms of McMaster, but it's also Hamilton in terms of wherever you are. I know whether a lot of students work in the summertime, a lot of students work elsewhere, they can raise this and say, look, this is a living wage. It's $14.95 an hour. Let's see if we can get this in the place where you work in the summer, or let's see this where we can get this in other places that people are familiar with. So I think it's the kind of issue that people can understand and that people can make a contribution to themselves individually. I think that's one of the reasons why it resonates so broadly with so many people in the community.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Don?
No, I just want to thank you very much for having me here. I hope that we'll be able to have other conversations about this, and I appreciate your willingness to raise these issues for the McMaster community and for the national community. You understand that you're with rabble.ca as well, so other Canadians will be able to hear about this, and I hope that other cities will attempt to do this. There are groups organizing in different places in Canada, and I hope that Hamilton can become a kind of beacon for them about, certainly for a large city, would be the first large city to have a living wage, and that this can roll out across many communities in Canada and make a difference in the economy and in the society. So thanks very much.
Thanks for coming down and doing the interview, Don. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks very much, Riaz.
This is Progressive Voices. I'm Riaz Sainimalji.
And I'm Ryan Sparrow.
And we'll talk to you next week.